and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The 9th of May is a venerated day on the Russian calendar. It marks the victory over fascism in Europe in 1945. Tragically, the collective West has forgotten this day. Crosstalking Victory Day, I'm joined by my guest, Vladimir Goldstein, in Providence. He is the chair of the Department of Slavic Studies at Brown University. In Belgrade, we have Stephen Gajic. He is a research associate at Belgrade's Institute of European Studies. And in Vienna, we cross to Alexander Markovic. He is head of the Suvorov Institute in Vienna. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Vladimir, you were born in the Soviet Union, so I want to go down history lane, since this is actually a program about history, a very important history for millions and millions of people around the world, particularly in Russia. What was Victory Day like when you were living in the Soviet Union?
Well, it was an unbelievably, joyful holiday. You know, first of all, there was a whole kind of cluster of, May Days, May 1st, May 2nd, May 9th. So everybody was like spring, everybody was celebrating. And, there was, of course, certain bittersweet moments. My father was in the war, and, they always, when people get together, they would remember those who were killed, who were not there with them. But still, the mood was very festive. No school. You can watch amazing parade on TV. It was, you can see, people marching. So it was just a lot of light, a lot of color, a lot of joy. I don't know how many, Russians really at that moment, Soviets, studied history, whatever. But it was like we all knew it was like in our bones that this is a triumphant, happy day.
You knew it in your bones, That's here again, and I'll talk about that later in the program here, because I want to talk about how Victory Day is being redefined in a very good way, in my opinion. Stephen, in my introduction, the collective West is primarily overwhelmingly kind of forgotten this day. This Victory Day on May 9th. Why is that, okay? I mean, is it they don't want to give credit to the Soviet Union / Russians? They have a fascism problem now in the West. There's a lot of different avenues we could discuss when we talk about the apathy in the West.
I think that George Orwell gave us the answer in his 1984. The Ministry of Truth is creating or recreating the past. So that is why... because of the current political issues or political agendas, they are minusculing the role of the Soviet Union. They don't want to mention that almost 30 million Soviet, mostly Russian citizens died liberating Europe. And especially now that we have this revival of Nazism in the West in general, but especially on the European continent. First, it started with Eastern Europe, but then it spread. If the rumors are true, symbolism of the Victory Day, the Russian flags, the Soviet flags would be banned in Berlin for the 9th of May, but we'll see. Anyways, this is issue that they have a problem with. And also, when we talk about historical revisionism, it is Germany that came now with a resolution that wants to slander Serbs, and it was the Germans who, during World War II, shot thousands of not only citizens but also school children, especially in the city of Kragujevac during World War II. So now historical revisionism has came to outrageous levels.
Well, it's very interesting, Alexander. When I was a young man, one of the most impressive documentaries I've ever seen up until today was The World at War. It was made by the BBC. And it was a brilliant series, primarily because it had witnesses, people that were actually witnessed the events. Making these kind of documentaries now are very difficult because you don't have witnesses. that has essentially been washed away. It's not on YouTube anymore. When it was, it had millions of hits. It was one of the, I believe, one of the greatest documentaries ever made. But there was two episodes in that documentary series that was, I guess you would say today, was sympathetic to the Soviet Union. That's verboten today. Alexander.
Well, yes, as mentioned before, there's a certain political trend in the West which actually tries to diminish the Soviet casualties and also the Soviet contribution to actually defeating fascism in media and in historiography. And therefore, of course, for example, if you look at the change of the official narrative in the West, you could somehow get the impression that it was actually not the Soviet Union fighting against Hitler and the Nazis in World War II, but that they were some kind of ally of National Socialism and fascism, yeah. And that it was just because of the United States, of Great Britain, that fascism was defeated, which is, of course, totally wrong. But since you now have this Western war of aggression against Russia and in this overall war for Ukraine, of course, you're trying to demonize Russia as much as possible. And this means also altering the history itself. Like said before, the Ministry of Truth is alive and well again, it seems. And therefore, you have this strange kind of history policy going on, not only in Germany, where you're no longer allowed to show Soviet flags on the Soviet Day of Victory, but where German media, for example, also try to portray Vladimir Putin as the second Adolf Hitler, as the new fascist dictator, etc.
All the while, the same Germany that you're talking about is arming fascistic battalions in Ukraine. So it
absolutely
Germany has a lot. It has a lot to answer for, particularly today. Okay, Vladimir. You know, one of the things that we've seen here is that when we look at the narrative of the destruction of fascism in Europe, you have the Hollywood version saving Private Ryan. The war is over after the invasion of Normandy, apparently, to Hollywood. And then you have this very despicable trend of equating the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany as being the same thing. Both are historically, obviously, wrong. Vladimir.
Yeah, history has been a religion, unfortunately. And it was a, you know, very successful campaign, I guess, in the West. You know, we know by the studies when they ask, say, French people right after the war, evaluate contribution, and Russia will be like considered like the main contributor to the victory. You move forward 30 years ago, you do the same poll, and all of a sudden the same French people say that, you know, United States are a main contributor. And I tell you a concrete anecdote from my teaching career. We're teaching a course at Yale, of all places, on Russian culture, and my colleague historian says to the students, we're talking about World War II, that Russia won the war. Students look like with a big surprise, And he said, and brings all this kind of course, concrete historical data. Then, you know, okay, the young students, they listen to that. Then I am hanging out with my friends, all university educated, and I just refer to this episode. They look at me like, of course Americans won the war. What are you talking about? So they thought I'm making things up. I said, you know, I know this subject. So, but I would add that it is done for a very particular and rather nefarious and bad reason. Because if you recognize that Russians lost so many people and did, you know, such a major contribution, you're bound to take the country and its interests very seriously. You're bound to take their concerns about national security, safety of their borders seriously. If you think they didn't do anything, then you just don't take it seriously. And I think it's really kind of funny how the whole narrative shifts, that, you know, now, of course, we all take the interest of Jewish people seriously. They remember there was a Holocaust. So this is taken seriously. But Russia, forget about it. And this is kind of very peculiar. So, you know, the world bends over backwards to understand the traumas, to understand this and that. This is all legitimate. But what about, you know, Russia? What about their national concern? Their borders have been crossed again and again and again by invading European forces who, instead of just recognizing what, you know, the Russian contribution, they just poo-poo it, diminish it, and to add, you know, like icing on the cake, Kuwait now Russians to Nazis.
Yeah, you know, Stephen, the historical fact is that the Red Army liberated all of the death camps and other camps as it moved west. That history is being forgotten too, Stephen.
Exactly. I mean, if you ask people, I remember personally, I was studying in the United States and I had these conversations about World War II and who was the greatest contributor. I was obviously saying it was the Soviet Union, and people would laugh. I mean, they think that the war was won in the Pacific in battles on some islands with Japan and in Normandy. And the rest is some blurry picture that doesn't really exist, especially the story with the death camps that were all liberated by the Soviet Union. And this is why, you know, Holocaust ended when the Red Army entered these places. So up until they were liberated, the factories of death were working. And this is one of the I would say, greatest humanitarian achievements during the war. But this is only one of the episodes. And it is not only not recognized, but it seems that the sanctions that we see of West against Russia are going beyond today's moment. However, by doing this, the mainstream Western historiography has isolated itself, as the West has in general.
What they do, before we go to the break here, they celebrate Nazis in Canada. We saw that.
Yeah,
okay. And that's not going to be the end of it. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Victory Day. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Victory Day. Okay, let's go back to Alexandria in Vienna. One of the interesting things here, since we're talking about history and historiography, if we look at the present day, the proxy war that is being waged against Russia using Ukraine, if we think back to 1941 when the Soviet Union was invaded, Nazi Germany had an array of a coalition of countries. It occupied, it was allied with, and it was the collective West, not the United States yet, but the collective West under the rule of Nazi Germany invaded the Soviet Union. Now let's go up to today. Russia is facing a wide coalition of Western countries, almost exactly the same ones, in its standoff over Ukraine. A lot, you know, if you say that, that's heresy for a lot of people, because, you know, what Russia is saying, and Vladimir has already touched upon it, you know, wave after wave, where is of invasions? Where do they come from? They come from the West. Go ahead, Alexander.
Yes, exactly. I just recently watched the great movie Alexander Nevsky by Sergei Eisenstein, which actually premiered in 1941, shortly before the start of Operation Barbarossa, of the Nazi invasion of the Soviet Union, which actually had this very topic, that there is a long history of Western aggression against Russia, of course, coming from the West to Russia, because the West is not able to accept Russia as the other, as a different civilization,
right,
which is actually not itself. And therefore, it, yeah, regularly, you could say, tries to destroy Russia, to obliterate it, to colonize it, to tear it apart, as we could see in all these plans about the so-called decolonization of Russia. And unfortunately, there are also these plans of exterminating Russian people, as we could see not only during Generalplan Ost, but also during the Kiev putsch regime since 2014, the events in Odessa, what happened in Donbass with the massacres there. And yeah, therefore, of course, the West somehow tries to neglect actually this very fact that there is a long history of aggressions coming from the West to Russia, and that, of course, Russia is not hallucinating or insane if it says that it has a need for security guarantees by the West, that it has a need for peace in Eastern Europe and for a security zone. And yeah, of course, therefore, history maybe is not directly repeating itself, but it rhymes.
There's a real rhyming
from the Middle Ages over the Nazi aggression until now. Yeah,
no doubt that there is a pattern here. Vladimir, it's very interesting. Again, if you want to take history seriously, Russia, Imperial Russia, what we call Russia today, is the only major landmass the Western powers never colonized. And that is what they see as a missed opportunity, and they haven't given up on it. Russia is the only one that stands out, that was not colonized by an outsider. Vladimir.
Yeah, it's a unique civilization. There is a very good historian, Marshall Poe, and he wrote about that. He said, yes, it's a peculiar, unique culture and civilization, which it didn't fall under the Western attacks. You know, you can look for, former civilization, Ottomans, Indians, Mexicans, Chinese, they all were crushed by the West, and it was shaped into their own image and likeness, as opposed to Russia, who, traditionally goes into, tremendous efforts to defeat, the invaders. And I would even add to Alexander, I love Alexander Nevsky film, these Teutonic Knights, which invaded, Russian lands and whom Nevsky defeated in the 12th century, they were actually related to this order of Western Knights who, in the Fourth Crusade, on their way to Jerusalem, they actually sacked Constantinople.
Yep.
They destroyed this Orthodox center. That's what they did. So this is the very, so we can add also certain hostility just to religious dimension of Russia as well, because Russia is unique kettle of fish, giant civilization, religion. So somehow the West feels very uncomfortable about it. Plus, it has all this endless amount of resources and this amount of the land. And that was a very tasty morsel for the West to grab. And they continue to do that. So it's not paranoia.
It's not paranoia at all. Stephen, again, broadly speaking, if we look at what many would call the greatest ills of the 20th century, fascism, and for many people, communism, fair enough here. But those are Western ideas. Western ideas that came from the West. Unfortunately, it took hold and I'm just expressing my opinion, in Russia. Russia has recovered from that tumultuous experience. But these are Western ideas that Russia has had to confront.
Yeah, that is true. I'd like to go back to the issue of broader European, Western European coalitions against Russia. This is, in a way, a unique situation that we are witnessing now, that the West is almost completely united against Russia. But it was not the first time. Only in 19th century, there was the Crimea War, mm-hmm. With a coalition of a broader coalition of Western countries. But also before that, the Napoleonic Wars, we always see it as Russians versus the French. But in fact, the French army consisted of many other Western European peoples and small armies that were joining it. So in a sense, there is a cycle, a historical cycle. The component that you mentioned, ideas, is also very important, because Russia was, for the last 300 years, always, unfortunately, in some kind of a cultural schizophrenia, looking at the West,
yes.
and then getting infected by the ideas that could eventually be almost lethal to it. And I think that this is a peculiar moment in the sense that Russia is finally awakened. And I don't think that they will repeat the same pattern that started somewhere with the reforms of Peter the Great. And Russia is basically, I think, coming back to itself.
Well, Stephen, to add to that, I agree with you absolutely. The difference is Russia has modernized itself. It's not at a disadvantage like it was before, particularly as you brought up the Crimean War. Alexander, I've lived here for 26 years, and I studied European and Russian history at graduate school. And, you know, I always looked at the Victory Day, May 9th, as during the Soviet Union as a legitimizing factor for the Communist Party. They won the war, and they should get the credit. Fair enough. I'm not going to take away from that. But I think now, in the 21st century, and we've already touched upon it in this program, this is also a celebration of values, and I would say conservative values also. Go ahead, Alexander.
Yes, I would agree with you, since, of course, the Great Patriotic War in Russian historiography is connected with the defense of the motherland, with the defense of Russian sovereignty, and also, of course, with the defeat of fascism, and therefore with the defeat of Western aggression against Russia. And yeah, therefore, of course, it's not only an important day for Russia, but for most European countries, definitely also, because it meant the end of fascism. And there may be also ordinary Germans and Austrians who suffered from the consequences of the defeat of fascism. But I guess that the very defeat of fascism itself is an important event, because unfortunately, neither communists nor conservatives in Austria and in Germany were actually able to topple the Hitler regime and fascism by themselves. So they needed this help from the outside. Otherwise, we would maybe still live under fascist rule. And I guess, therefore, it's also an important day for Europe itself.
Yeah, well, Vladimir, it should be, but it's not, okay? Because, you know, you've been on this program many times, and I always appreciate it, but this is also a culture war. The West rejects Russia's culture and its attitudes and its values. That's part of this proxy war against Russia. Vladimir.
Yeah, I mean, we can witness it as of recently, you know, provoked by the war in Ukraine, out of the blue, theater performances are canceled, opera performances are canceled. You know, Russia's contributed, you know, there was like, I remember I was reading that at a certain moment in Italy, they wanted to teach a course on Dostoevsky. They came up with the idea, maybe it's not the time. What do you mean it's not the time? This is like world classic. This, everybody benefits. You know, I teach, you know, I taught Dostoevsky the other semester. Students, you should see their eyes. They open up. They're happy. You know, we have one of the most popular courses in our department the other day. This semester was on Tolstoy. You know, this is like universal values, and it has to be recognized and appreciated. But I would also say that Russia also have to appreciate, you know, Western values. There's, you know, we shouldn't just diminish it. I mean, Peter the Great was a very wise guy and a clever guy. He was patriot of Russia, but he knew that to deal with the West, to fight the West, he has to have modern navy, modern this and that. So one have to be very a kind of creative in this, not slavishly repeating Western patterns, which probably do not work. Russia is totally different history, totally different culture, but to use them pragmatically, there is absolutely kind of nothing wrong with it. And I think I would say that, you know, some smart Westerners actually understand it. You know, I know that, you know, the whole idea, for example, sustainable agriculture was very actively developed by Russian scientist and anarchist Kropotkin. He was like very much, you know, very much preoccupied, and they know that, and they learn it. So I think if West can be pragmatic, Russia should be pragmatic too.
Well, we've run out of time. I wish the West would act on its words, you know, like accept diversity. They don't accept diversity if it has Russian characteristics with it. Gentlemen, thank you very much. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Providence, Vienna, and in Belgrade. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.